one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to do things a little bit differently here to start off the week. Normally, at the beginning of the week, this is where you would hear the Roundtable podcast with myself and Justin and Liz. But our schedules were a little bit weird this week, and so we're going to be doing the Roundtable in the middle of the week. So I will be here doing a solo pod with you to recap another series win by the Phillies. This one in New York against the struggling last place Mets. You hate to see it. We'll go through all of the storylines from what was a successful weekend in New York, and also give you some other notes from around the team. The Phillies sign a veteran player who is going to go to the minors, but it's a guy you've all heard of before. I'm not real sure he's any good anymore, but the Phillies are looking for some depth in the outfield, and we'll tell you who that is. Andrew Painter makes his first start since rejoining the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs over the weekend. How'd that go? And we'll take a quick look at the American League. Only four teams with a winning record in the American League. It's almost July here, American League. What are you doing? So lots to get to here on this edition of Hittin' Season. Please, folks, a reminder, if you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and you have a minute or two and would love to give the show a five-star rating and or a review, I would love to hear what you have to think, what you have to say about the show, what you think of the show. So go ahead and do that. But we are on Spotify. We are on all of the different podcast apps. So if you've got friends or family members who like the Phillies and they don't listen to this podcast, please send them our way. Just, you know, copy the show, get a link and text it to them. It's that simple. And then they become podcast pals for life. All right, let's jump into Phillies versus Mets. And the Phillies, by taking 2 out of 3, are 10 games over 500. They are 47-37 on the season. And according to the Elias Sports Bureau, the Phillies are the first team in Major League Baseball history to be 10 games under 500 in April and then be 10 games over 500 at any point prior to the end of June. What an incredible turnaround by the Phillies here over these last couple of months. Obviously, we all know the start that they got off to, and the fact that they are where they are right now, it is their fourth straight series victory, and they have won 7 out of their last 8 series, capped off by Sunday's 5-4 win over the Mets. Kyle Schwarber with the go-ahead 2-run home run in the top of the 7th inning, his 30th home run of the season. As great as his year was a season ago, Kyle Schwarber is beating it. How can he be better than he was last season? I just, you know, 56 home runs a season ago, I really didn't think he was going to have this kind of prolific output once again. I really do think moving him to the designated hitter full time, that he's always been a home run hitter, but ever since they moved him to the DH full time, he has been on another level of hitting home runs. I know Shohei Ohtani gets all the love in terms of being the best hitting DH, but if you're talking about just a pure DH, like a guy who just, you know, you need to be your power guy at designated hitter, I guess Kyle Schwarber is the number two, because you can't put anybody ahead of Shohei Ohtani, although it's hard to see him as a DH because he also pitches, and if he didn't pitch, he'd probably play the outfield somewhere. But Kyle Schwarber is one of a kind, and he hit his 30th home run of the season on Sunday. He is the first hitter in Major League Baseball to get to 30 bombs this year, but you also had earlier in the game, Bryce Harper hits a sacrifice fly, Alec Boehm hits an RBI double, Brandon Marsh hits an RBI double. So again, the Phillies are getting, they're getting production from up and down the lineup, specifically Boehm, Marsh. Stott didn't do a whole lot on Sunday, but he has been really hot. But again, Kyle Schwarber, you know, the Phillies get, they're up 3-0 early thanks to the Harper sac fly, the Boehm RBI double, and the Brandon Marsh RBI double down the right field line. But once Jesus Luzardo left the game after just 5 innings, the bullpen, Chase Shugart, really had a hard time in the game on Sunday. Chase Shugart was only able to get 1 out before he needed to be picked up a little bit, but gave up 3 runs in the process, and all of a sudden the Phillies found themselves down 4-3. But Kyle Schwarber comes up off Kodai Senga, who did not start the game, came in the fourth inning, but then went the final four innings for the Mets. Or no, the final five innings in this game for the Mets. Tried to sneak a fastball by Kyle Schwarber ahead in the count 1-2. Kodai, look, my friend, this is Kyle Schwarber you're talking about here, man. You can't, he's looking for that juice. You can't bring him that. He smoked that thing out to right center field. I mean, it wasn't like one of those second deckers that we've seen at Citizens Bank Park here over the last couple of weeks, but he got plenty of it. And if you listen to the SNY reporters or the broadcast, that great team that Ron Darling and Keith Hernandez are a part of, man, it's just they are rough on that team, on those Mets, man. And they were lighting up Kodai Senga for trying to throw him a 1-2 fastball. But Schwarber launched it. The Phillies go ahead 5-4, and Schwarber's career season just continues. But another kind of late inning rally by the Phillies to pull another game out. And the Mets had a chance at the end of this game in the seventh and the eighth innings. They had a chance to blow it open. They had second and third with two outs in the seventh inning. Jose Alvarado, with a throwing error, trying to get the final out of the inning, throws it into right field. Just a terrible decision by Alvarado. Lucky they didn't score there. But he gets out of the inning on another grounder back to the pitcher, and this time runs it three quarters of the way to first base before underhanding it. And then he walks off pumped up, which I guess I understand, you know, he's trying to protect a one-run lead at that point. Bottom of the seventh, Kyle Schwarber just puts him ahead with a two-run home run. And here comes Jose Alvarado trying to dance through the raindrops. And this is kind of how he's been all year. But he got the job done in the seventh inning, kept him off the board. And then Orion Kerkering, who's been up and down over the last week or so, walks the bases loaded with one out in the bottom of the eighth. Again, the Phillies holding on, gripping tightly the 5-4 lead. But Ronnie Mauricio has one of the most brain-dead at-bats. And this is, you want to know why the Mets lose? It's because of at-bats like the one Ronnie Mauricio had. And frankly, the Phillies were having at-bats like this early in the season when they were going through their struggles. The Phillies have been so much smarter at the plate over the last few weeks. If a pitcher is hanging themselves like the Nationals did in the game on, on Thursday, the Phillies are letting them. They're being much, much better at the plate, having much better plate appearances. But here, Ronnie Mauricio, he's ahead 1-0. Orion Kerkering has walked the bases loaded. You got to make that guy throw you a strike at least before you swing. But Mauricio popped out to second base on a 1-0 pitch. Everybody had to freeze. Infield fly rule was in effect. And then Kerkering got a strikeout to end the inning. And the Mets were turned away. And then Joan Duran closes the door in the ninth inning. The Mets stranded 14 base runners in that game, including 9 in scoring position. Man, how many times did we watch the Phillies have a game like that earlier this year where they had a lot of guys on base and just couldn't get it done, couldn't get those runners in, couldn't execute the fly ball with a runner on third and less than two outs to get that guy home? That was the Mets' problem on Sunday. Jesus Luzardo started the game, looked great for the first four innings, and then had nearly 30-pitch fifth inning as pitching from the stretch, again, continues to be a problem for him. When he can pitch onto the windup, he's electric, and his stuff is dancing all over the place, and he is hard to square up. He's hard to get the bat on the ball, but when he's pitching from the stretch, he's a different guy. Now, he only gave up the one run, 4 hits and 5 innings of work, but 3 walks in the game. So 7 base runners in 5 innings, 6 strikeouts. He needed 96 pitches to get through those 5 innings of work. And then Chase Shugart comes in, gives up 3 runs, and gives up the lead in just a third of an inning before Kyle Backus is able to help them get out. He did give up an inherited runner, Backus did, but got out of it with any more damage after that. And then you had Jose Alvarado, Ryan Kerkering, and Joan Duran shut the door as the Phillies held on for another one-run victory. The Phillies are piling up a lot of those this year. Not as many of late, as the offense has really come around, but earlier in the season, and even at the beginning of this hot streak, it was all on the backs of the pitching staff. And now the offense is picking up that slack a little bit here, which you like to see in the month of June as the weather has gotten sticky and steamy. So a great win by the Phillies on Sunday afternoon to finish off the series win against a struggling Mets team. And a lot of times, you know, a team gets a bump when a new manager gets appointed or gets hired, brought in. In this case, you know, well, we'll get into the managerial thing in just a few minutes, because I have a little bit more to say about that. But Philly's doing a good job winning this the final game of a long road trip. You know, it wasn't a long road trip, but this is in the midst of a slate of games where they're playing 23. It's 19 of 23 games on the road. So they had this road trip and they played really well against divisional opponents here over the last week and a half or so. But they go in to Washington and win 3 out of 4, including those crazy wins to finish up that series. And then they go into New York and win 2 out of 3 against the New York Mets. On Saturday, they did not have a very good game. The defense was not good at all on Saturday. Bryce Harper hit a 2-run home run to get them on the board early and give them an early 2-0 lead. But this time around, the bullpen game didn't work out so great. Tim Mesa did well starting off the game. Got the first 4 outs, an inning and a third, gave up no runs. Alan Rangel then came in. He was pitching pretty well for the first few innings, but then in his fourth inning of work, gave up 4 runs on 4 hits. Kyle Backus also gave up 2 runs in an inning, and the Phillies offense was never able to muster a whole lot. After that, some bad defense by Gabriel Rincones Jr. in right field. Trey Turner had a tough game at shortstop on Saturday. The Phillies really did not play well in that middle game, and the Mets were able to give their manager, Andy Tracy, his first win as the team's new skipper. But on Friday, as the Phillies rolled into town and the Mets had made the news that they had fired their manager, long overdue, as far as I'm concerned, but it's Andy Green hired to be his replacement. I said the wrong name. A second. I don't even remember what name I said. Andy Green, the manager, taking over for Carlos Mendoza. But on Friday, a really well-pitched ball game, kind of a classic baseball game. Phillies 2, Mets 1. Zach Wheeler continues to dominate since coming back from his thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. 7 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, a 2.03 ERA for Zach Wheeler. And he will still tell you he doesn't think he's pitching great. He doesn't have it already. Again, just 5 strikeouts in 7 innings. That kind of tells the story. But he is learning how to pitch in all kinds of different ways, and it is fun to watch him on the mound. He's still pitching deep into games. What a tremendous game from Zach Wheeler on Friday night. And then you had Orion Kerkering handle the 8th without any problem, and Joan Duran shut down the Mets in the final 2 innings to lock down the 2-1 win. So both victories against the Mets here this weekend, 1-run wins. Against New York. Trey Turner and Bryce Harper had the lone RBIs. Harper had 3 hits in the game on Friday. But you will likely remember this game most for the catch that Derek Hill made on Friday night. I think it's the greatest outfield robbery by any Phillies outfielder in team history. I think it's reminiscent. The only one I could compare it to was Milt Thompson going over the wall in San Diego in 1993. I think it was April of 93 on their first West Coast road trip. Remember, he went back to the wall, went over the wall to bring the ball back during that Phillies insane run at the beginning of 1993. This was better than that, though. You had Derek Hill sprinting at top speed from center field, and just the timing of the jump at the apex of his jump, arm outstretched, ball. I mean, that ball was clearing the fence by a good 5 to 7 feet. It wasn't a wall scraper. It was a solid home run, but Derek Hill runs over there at full speed, times his jump up against the wall perfectly, extends the glove over the fence, and brings the Juan Soto home run back. Everybody on the field. You look at every Phillies player on the field, couldn't believe what they were watching. Zach Wheeler. You get Zach Wheeler to smile on the field in the middle of a game that he's pitching, you know that you've done something. You know that you've done something noteworthy. Derek Hill going over the wall to rob Juan Soto, of all people, too. It's the greatest outfield robbery in Phillies history. I don't know where it ranks among all-time greatest Phillies catches. There certainly are some that leap to mind. Obviously, Aaron Rowan smashing his face into the center field wall back in 2006 will live in our memory banks for forever. Nothing will ever compare to the Tony Barron catch in 1997. I hope, if you haven't seen it, I don't know where you've been, go to YouTube, type in Phillies Tony Barron. You'll see the most insane catch you've ever seen in your life. I've talked about it on this podcast before. If you've missed it, I urge you to pause this podcast, get to a computer, type in Phillies Tony Barron, B-A-R-R-O-N. He made a catch in 1997 on the Veterans Stadium concrete artificial turf, where he completely laid out. I remember this is a 1997 Phillies team that I don't remember how many losses they had, but it was in the 90s. This was a dead team that was going nowhere. And Tony Barron's trying to make a living, man. He's a veteran guy who was getting a chance to play a lot, and he sacrificed his career for this catch. He was never the same after that catch. He went full extension in the air. I can't even believe how high he got in the air, catching this line drive off the bat of Gary Gaetti and smashed into the concrete, artificial turf covered concrete of the Veterans Stadium. He was down on the ground for a long time, minutes, had to leave the game. That to me still is the greatest catch I've ever seen by a Phillies outfielder. I don't know. I think I would put the Derek Hill catch ahead of the Aaron Rowan catch, because the Aaron Rowan catch was great. But what we remember about the Aaron Rowan catch is that he smashed his face into the wall. The catch itself was awesome, but this catch by Derek Hill was far more artful and skillful than just running face first into a wall. Now, that I'm not taking anything away from Aaron Rowan there, but this was one of the greatest catches you're ever going to see, one of the greatest defensive plays you're ever going to see by a Philadelphia Philly. And it comes from Derek Hill, who is quickly becoming the folk hero of the 2026 Phillies. And I was thinking about it. Every great team has a couple of folk heroes on it, right? The 93 team had Matt Stairs. The 2008 team had Matt Stairs. He was their folk hero. He was the guy nobody expected anything of. You signed him, you traded for him in August as a post-waiver deadline trade. He makes the postseason roster, but he doesn't do anything the whole season for you, really. He gets that big hit in the NLCS. And you remember Matt Stairs forever. You remember Matt Stairs forever as Phillies fans. I don't know if that's where we're going with Derek Hill, but he had quite a week, didn't he? In Washington, had quite a week with the Phillies against the Nationals, and then on Friday night just continued, maybe the greatest week of his professional career, going over the wall to rob Juan Soto of that home run. I could talk about that home run all day long, which is tremendous. And he's going to get more playing time, because even against right-handers, he's going to play right field like he did on Sunday, because Phillies rookie Gabriel Rincones Jr., like Felix Reyes before him, both of them hit a home run very early in their call-ups and then did nothing after that. Rincones Jr. struggling mightily, hitting 118 on the season right now, 4-for-34 since his call-up, with 9 strikeouts and no walks. The at-bats are not good through his first 10 major league games, and he had a rough game defensively on Saturday night. He's not a good defender out there. And right now, Derek Hill's earning more playing time. Ride the magic while you can. And it's yet another Phillies prospect who is disappointing. You're not giving up on him after 10 games, Rincones Jr., but right now you're going to play Derek Hill because he's given you great at-bats. I don't expect him to keep it up for forever, but he's an excellent defensive outfielder, so at least he's given you something there. And he's giving you more power than you thought you were going to get, and getting some clutch hits from him as well. So Derek Hill is going to be a guy for a little while, I think, with this team, quickly establishing himself as a folk hero of the 2026 Phillies. So now, your big three storylines. Actually, I've got 4 storylines here from the series. Can the Phillies catch the Atlanta Braves? Don't look now, but the Phillies are 3 games back in the National League East. Atlanta lost 2 out of 3 to the Giants out in San Francisco. They are now 4-12 in their last 16 games. The Braves have hit the skids, and you hate to see it, don't you? You hate to see the Atlanta Braves go into the tank like this, but that's what they're doing. And now here, as we are getting ready to hit July. It's very early in the morning on June 29th. The Phillies have moved to within 3 games of the Atlanta Braves. Back on June 7th, just 22 days ago, the Braves were 9.5 up on the Phillies in the National League East. And in that time, the Phillies have whittled the lead down to 3 games. By the time the All-Star break rolls around, are the Phillies going to be in first place? Is that possible? How could that even be possible? Yet here we are. And we knew coming into the season, these two teams were closer together than it looked like early on. The Atlanta Braves raced out to that hot start. The Phillies struggled, obviously. But now it's the Braves who are engaged in some tough times. And so you look at what's happening, what's coming up this week for the Atlanta Braves and the Phillies. So the Phillies are going to host the Pittsburgh Pirates for a 4-game series at Citizens Bank Park. The Pirates are 500 ball club, 42-42, but the Phillies swept the Pirates earlier in the year out in Pittsburgh. Meanwhile, the Atlanta Braves have a home series against the St. Louis Cardinals, who are a surprising 43-38 and playing a spunky brand of baseball. So the Phillies and Braves both playing a couple of National League Central teams at home, who are both playing pretty well so far this year. Surprising. The teams with their level of play, the Pirates and the Cardinals. So kind of playing a similar opponent. We'll see how this goes as we got another, week and a half until the All-Star game rolls around. You know, a little less than 2 weeks. Phillies, can they climb to the top of the National League East by the time the All-Star game rolls around? Forget about the end of the season. This is an absolute horse race now. We were all resigned to just the Phillies being a wild card team and seeing if you could get that top wild card team. Oh no, friends, don't look now. But the Phillies are breathing down the Atlanta Braves' necks after their struggles in San Francisco. Just terrible. Just terrible. Terrible news. All right, the second big storyline, Harper and Schwarber both go deep in this series against the Mets. Who's going to get to 400 home runs first? Because as of right now, both Harper and Schwarber are on pace to finish the season with 399 career home runs. Bryce Harper, after hitting a bomb on Saturday night, has 382 home runs for his career. Harper is on pace to hit 36 home runs this season. So he is on a really good pace. Schwarber has 370 career home runs. And as I mentioned, he is the fastest Philly to ever hit 30 home runs in a season, doing it in 84 games. Mike Schmidt held the previous mark. He didn't hit his 30th home run until game number 87 of the 1979 season. So Schwarber is 3 games ahead of Mike Schmidt's pace from 1979, the fastest Philly to hit 30 home runs in a season. We discussed back in May on Hittin' Season, Justin and Liz and myself, we talked about this already, which player we thought would get to 400 home runs first, whether Schwarber was more likely to surpass Bryce Harper and get to 400 home runs. We didn't really necessarily think it would be this year, but whether it would be Schwarber to 400 first or Bryce Harper to 400 first. Harper still has a 12 home run head start on Schwarber, but the rate at which Kyle Schwarber is hitting home runs led all of us to believe that Schwarber would surpass Bryce Harper in dingers. But Bryce has the home run swing. He's got the heavy bat, which I assume he's still using, and he's hitting bombs this season. Harper on pace to hit 36. He went 5-for-11 in the series against the Mets in New York. Of course, now Schwarber is on pace to hit 59 home runs. 59 home runs is Schwarber's pace right now, which would be one better than Ryan Howard's record of 58. I still think Schwarber is more likely to get to 400 home runs before Bryce Harper, despite Harper having this significant advantage, 12 home runs, and despite the fact that Harper's power is there this year, Schwarber is on another level at the moment. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be Schwarber who gets to 400 home runs before Bryce Harper can get there. But we're having a lot of fun watching them duke it out. It's not quite at the level of watching Steve Carlton and Nolan Ryan surpass each other start by start on the all-time strikeouts list. In 1983 and 84, Nolan Ryan and Steve Carlton at various times both held the all-time record for most strikeouts. Both were well over 3,000 strikeouts legends. These two legends going at it start after start over the course of 2 years, setting the all-time strikeout record for starting pitchers until Nolan Ryan eventually pulled away and Steve Carlton's career kind of fizzled out. This isn't that necessarily, but this is going to be a fun race to watch and to handicap, watching Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber see who can get to 400 the fastest. All right, storyline number three. The Mets came into this series with a new manager. They fired Carlos Mendoza finally as this team was falling apart. But as we saw in this series, you need a lot more than a new manager to help fix things. Andy Green, hired to be his replacement, comes from the front office. Both teams, you'll remember, started the season 9-19. And so this series was a really good look at the two divergent paths the Phillies and the Mets have taken. Since starting the season 9-19, the Phillies have gone 38-18. They've played 20 games over 500 since starting 9-19 and replacing Rob Thomson with Don Mattingly. The Mets' record since then is 26-30. They've played 4 games under 500 since starting 9-19. Now, one has to wonder if they make the if they decide to relieve Carlos Mendoza of his duties earlier, do they recover? Do they go on maybe not a similar kind of spree that the Phillies have, but are they better than 26-30 over their last 56 games? Who's to say? I don't know. I don't think they would have done what the Phillies have done, because the Phillies, I think, just have a better roster than the Mets do. But the Mets broadcast had their sideline reporter, their dugout reporter, on talking about what happened with the Phils after Don Mattingly took over for Rob Thomson. And he relayed a story that Brandon Marsh was telling them, who said that Mattingly told the team that they were going through the motions under Rob Thomson, that there was no chatter in the dugout during games. No one was talking. No one was vocal. No one was animated. And in the clubhouse, no one was talking, that the team just kind of looked dead. And Mattingly challenged the Phillies that if they were going to lose, if they're going to lose 10 in a row, 11 in a row, 12 in a row, at least say that you lost by letting it loose, by playing with your hair on fire. And he said it served as a wake-up call to them, because the team felt terribly that they cost Rob Thomson his job, but Don Mattingly called him on the carpet and said, "You guys aren't showing any fire. You guys aren't showing any emotion out there in the clubhouse, in the dugout. No one's talking." That seemed to be the wake-up call the Phillies needed. And sometimes, and that's what we say, when sometimes you need a different voice, it's hard at times for someone who has been with a group for a long time to notice a change like that. And it takes someone new, someone from the outside, to look at something and diagnose it in the way that Don Mattingly apparently did, according to Brandon Marsh. And so that's why you make a change like this. That's why the Mets should have made this change a long time ago, a month ago. If you didn't want to pull the trigger at the same time the Phillies did, okay, you could make a reasonable explanation for that. But we're almost in July, and now you're doing this? I like a team that wants to be loyal to people, but this was long overdue. Now, as we've seen, it's going to take more than just the Mets playing with their hair on fire. They have real issues. They have real problems. This team is not going to the playoffs. It's just not a very good team. But that being said, the two divergent paths these teams took after starting 9-19 were on full display this weekend in New York, and it was striking to see. A couple other notes before we wrap up. The Phillies made a signing this weekend, signing Tommy Pham to a minor league deal. Now, that's a name we have said a lot on this podcast over the last few years, when Tommy Pham was a productive big league platoon right-handed hitting outfielder. He was one of the guys we always mentioned for the Phillies to potentially go after, but he never seemed to be a guy that the Phillies were interested in. Well, now the Phillies have got him. They've signed him to a minor league deal. He's going to likely join AAA Lehigh Valley once he reports. No one should be expecting much from Tommy Pham here. The deal does have an opt-out clause that Pham can activate if he's not in the majors by July 25th, so it's a little less than a month. that Tommy Pham could be playing for the Iron Pigs. He's now 38 years old. He started the season with the Mets, but was DFA'd back on April 27th after he started the season 0 for 13 with 7 strikeouts. Yeah, that'll do it. And then he signed a minor league deal with the Orioles on May 16th. He was released on June 12th after hitting 197 with them. 12 for 61 with 4 home runs and 21 strikeouts over 16 games with AAA Norfolk. So he never even made it to the big leagues with the Orioles after signing a minor league deal with them, but apparently was on something similar. Was on a deal where he had to be released if he wasn't called up to the big league roster. So was on Baltimore's AAA squad, hit 197. I would be shocked if he does anything different with the Iron Pigs and doesn't get called up to the majors, and then the Phillies probably release him. That is most likely what is going to happen. Going back to last year, Pham was somewhat productive with the Pirates. Hit 245 with them, hit 10 home runs, 52 RBIs, had a 700 OPS in 120 games, but was better against left-handers than against right-handers. But no one should be expecting anything from Tommy Pham. I would be surprised if he gets a call-up to the majors. Andrew Painter made his first start with the AAA Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. He went 4 innings, needed 80 pitches to get through 4 innings, gave up 2 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts. Andrew Painter, I mean, they really need to get a number 5 starter so that they don't have to bring him back up this year. He's got to figure out how to be a pitcher post-Tommy John because he's not the same guy. I don't know if he's going to get back to being the same guy. If he's not, he doesn't have much right now that can get Major League or AAA hitters out. 80 pitches in 4 innings, that's not getting it done. He just needs to stay down in AAA until he starts to look more like the guy we saw before the Tommy John surgery. It's just that simple. And Alan Ronhell can probably do that job until they go get someone else at the trade deadline or at some point close to the trade deadline in July. And they will. They will go out and get somebody else. They will go out and do that. There's not a lot of guys available right now, and you're not going to get a high-end guy to add to the starting rotation. And I saw on MLB Network, I think it was Dan Plesac and Ruben Amaro Jr. talking about what the Phillies should do at the trade deadline. And Ruben Amaro has been kind enough to come on this podcast. He's a fun guy to listen to on the Phillies Show podcast. I enjoy listening to him on WIP. I enjoy his work on MLB Network Radio. But the suggestion that they made in a segment that aired, I think at the end of last week or over the weekend, was that they should go out and get another starter and put Jesus Luzardo in the bullpen. A guy you just signed to like a $130-some-odd million contract extension, you're going to put him in the bullpen? No. No. That's a terrible idea. That's a terrible idea. Especially when you're already short in the starting rotation. I can't imagine this fascination with turning Jesus Luzardo into a relief pitcher. I got it last year when he was really struggling. The guy struggles from the stretch. Why would you make him a reliever where you're going to pitch out of the stretch a lot? He did great. I think if you made him a reliever, he'd be good. I have no doubt about the fact he'd be good, but you need him in the rotation. And I don't care who you get at the trade deadline, you're still going to need him in the rotation because your number 4 is Aaron Nola. That just makes, I don't know what Kyle Backus is going to give you. Tanner Banks is not in the majors right now. Jose Luzardo has been really up and down. Like, I get that the left-handed options in the bullpen right now aren't the best. Jesus Luzardo, that ain't a great idea. And whoever thought that was a good idea and thought mentioning it on broadcast television was a good idea needs to be talked down from that ledge. Because that's a terrible idea. Absolutely awful. One last note that I saw, and there's nothing really to say about this other than for me to share this information with you because I care about you, the listener. Did you know that over in the American League, we don't pay a whole lot of attention to because it's a Phillies show and we care more about, you know, the Phillies in the National League. Right now, on June 29th, there are only 4 teams in the American League with a winning record. 4 teams as of June 29th with a winning record. They are the Tampa Bay Rays, who have the best record in the American League, at 48-33. The New York Yankees, who have the second best record at 48-35. The Chicago White Sox at 43-39, and we saw them in Philadelphia. They are pesky. And the Cleveland Guardians at 44-40. There are no other teams in the American League with a winning record right now than the Rays, the Yankees, the White Sox, and the Guardians. Every team in the American League is either 500 or below. The National League, by comparison, has 9 teams with a winning record right now. 9 teams with a winning record here on June 29th. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I promise you, midweek, we will have a roundtable show that you will be able to listen to and watch on the WHYY YouTube channel. Again, you can subscribe to the WHYY YouTube channel and see all of our roundtable shows there, as well as all the other great content that WHYY is churning out on a regular basis. But if you are an audio podcast consumer, which I know most of you are, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. If you want to send the show an email, please feel free to do so. We love hearing from you. The email address is hittinseason@billypenn.com. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.